Able Voice Podcast, where your voice is more than a melody.
Join us in planting seeds in a growing field.
Today, we welcome our guest Sarah Bell to the podcast. Sarah is based in St. John, Southern New Brunswick. She recently finished a five-year term at the end of June 2020 with Arpeggio Music Therapy Services. Sarah is a graduate of Concordia University, where she received a Master of Arts in Creative Arts Therapies with a focus of music therapy, after having completed a Bachelor in Music Education and Psychology at the University of Western Ontario.
Sarah has worked with a variety of clientele, from infants, newcomers from diverse backgrounds, people living with mental illness, and those living with dementia. Sarah sits on the Atlantic Association of Music Therapy as the membership chair and is a founding member of the Equity Advisors Council to the Canadian Association of Music Therapists. She is passionate about social justice and enjoys spending time at L'Arche, a community for people with various intellectual abilities.
We are grateful for the opportunity to chat with Sarah about her work and passion for equity within the field of music therapy.
We hope that you receive valuable takeaways from this episode, just as we did. So, without further ado, let's get into today's episode.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Able Voice Podcast with Haley and Kim.
Hello.
Today, we are joined by Sarah, who is a certified music therapist who is passionate about equity within our field. So welcome, Sarah.
Hi, thanks, Haley and Kim, so much for having me. I'm coming here from St. John, or West St. John, and I just want to acknowledge that I'm currently staying on the traditional unceded territory of the Wolastoq, Maliseet, and Mi'kmaq people, and I'm really happy to talk with you both today.
I love that. We are both from, or currently working in Kingston, Ontario, and you'll see in all of our bios as well that same land acknowledgement. I think that's very important that we are serving the Cataraqui, Ontario area. We were reading a bit about you in your bio, and you've done a lot in the past little while. Can you explain to us a little bit about what your journey has been like to becoming a practicing music therapist?
Sure. So I think where I'll start is when I first started experiencing music or playing music. So I began playing piano at a young age. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with this song, but it's by this UK artist named Sampha. And he has this song that's like, "No one knows me like the piano in my mother's home."
Oh, I love that.
And I really feel like that. So I started piano when I was young. And then in grade 8, when I was like 12, 13, I was sort of struck by the oboe. So I started taking like private lessons, getting into that sort of more orchestral world. Fast forward a few years, before I did my undergrad, I looked into music therapy at Acadia. Is that, I think, where you went?
Okay. Yeah.
You went, Haley. for some reason, like, I guess it just wasn't, I looked into it, but not the right time for me to go into it. So I went into music education at Western University in London. And there I studied oboe and music education, and I also stayed an extra year to do my psych requirements for Concordia University's music therapy program. And there I did a graduate certificate of music therapy, and then I did my master's, and I finished in 2016. So that's like that sort of training part. And then I think another big part of my journey has been like my own work on myself. So I've been in therapy, I think, for at least like 7 or 8 years. It's been a long time. And I've had the same therapist. He's great. He's Welsh. and every time I hear his accent, it just sort of like puts me at peace. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with this type of work, but it's a type of therapy called focusing. And it's based on this psychologist who was very influenced by Freud and Jung, I believe. And so focusing is like looking at different parts of the body that are maybe like holding tension. And then you sort of talk about like what's going on there for you. When I do it, like sometimes I feel like tension in my throat or something. Like that's a pretty common thing for me. And then I'll get like images or like flashbacks. So I really have found a lot of healing in that work. And in the future, I would love to be able to combine because I feel like music therapy and focusing could work really well.
Yeah, I could definitely see how that holds crossover. It's very interesting. First, it's always exciting for me to meet another Reed music therapist, somebody who's dabbled in the woodwind world, because my principal instrument was saxophone.
Nice.
And I don't use it very much anymore, but I'm always so excited when I meet somebody else who has an instrument that's not voice or piano or guitar as their primary instrument.
Yes. I always felt like I started on saxophone and then changed over to oboe, but I thought it was like too cool for me.
No, we always need more saxophones in the world, I think. But that's so cool. That's so interesting. And second, we had somebody on our podcast who talked about the connection between Reiki and music therapy. And that was all about energy and where you hold tension and energy in your body and things like that. So it was, I think, like, there's a lot of similarities there. And I feel like there is definitely room for that within our profession. We're very self-aware and we're always encouraging, you know, our clients to become more self-aware and realize different aspects of who they are and their humanness and where they are in their body and their groundedness. And so that's really special, I think. Did you say it was called focusing?
It's called focusing, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting. Cool. So you've done quite a bit recently, and I know in some of when we were connecting prior to setting up our podcast episode, you had mentioned that you were a first-time supervisor. What has that transition been like for you? And what also would you say is the most valuable part of the internship process?
So I love being a supervisor so much. Are either of you supervisors or interested?
So Haley and I both completed our internship training in the winter, and we're working towards setting up an internship site here in Kingston right now. So we're very, very excited and passionate about getting into that world as well.
Awesome. Yeah. I felt like it was a really smooth transition for me. I think some things around like what's the most valuable part is that it's so, I mean, it's part of the work we do as therapists, but like guiding someone along their journey and watching them like bloom and grow and like to be able to like challenge deeply their assumptions, to listen, to learn, and to like see someone change, I think is really beautiful and inspiring. My intern is amazing, and she's so grounded, and I feel like it's beautiful to like have her witness my work and me witness her work, and to just have someone at the end of the day be like, I really loved that like chord change you did, or like using that song, because so much of our work is solitary, you know. If only we could work in pairs, I think that would be
ideal.
Would be
yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, obviously, like I'm still learning as a first-time supervisor, but I found it so rewarding. I'm excited to hear, or like, I'm excited for both of your journeys on that.
Yeah, it's really exciting to kind of open that door and hopefully be accepting interns soon, like really soon. We haven't officially announced it yet, so but it's coming. You're probably one of the first to hear outside of our team. Yeah, but it's really exciting. If you had the ideal music therapy setup, what would it look like for you? Would you be working in tandem in a dyad with another therapist, or perhaps another interdisciplinary therapist or health professional?
That's a great question. In Montreal, I did part of my stage or practicum at a creative arts therapies like nonprofit center for women. And so there were drama therapists there, art therapists, and music therapists. And I found working there just like opened my horizon so much. And we had weekly team meetings like on how to like best help people. And I think to glean from other professions, especially in the creative arts therapies world, like we, mm-hmm. we work with like magic, you know? So, to be able to have that, I think is pretty wonderful. Yeah. I'm not sure what my ideal setup would be like, but I'm dreaming about that now. So
it's great that we are so, flexible. We can work with so many different healthcare professionals in different settings and even with other music therapists. It's such a beautiful thing, like you said, when it's not completely solitary work. Yeah. I think this music in general was made to be shared with others, and it's so great sometimes to have another perspective in the room with yeah. you. I think that's why Kim and I benefit so much from having our two voices on this podcast, is because sometimes we can see things so differently, and it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's that space to be able to, like you said, give that feedback or to share with one another, or to be able to bounce ideas off of one another, I find very special. And I love that you're able to kind of experience that within a supervisor intern relationship too, and to be able to watch that journey. I know for myself, I'm very grateful for the supervisors I've had in my life, and to hopefully be able to take on that role soon, as we've said, fingers crossed, is something I'm really looking forward to.
I'm so excited for you.
I think that even as we go along, like, there are so many hats that we wear, and we're influenced by so much along our scholastic journeys when, you know, we're students and we're taking in all this information about music therapy. And then, you know, you switch to a supervisor role and you're now in the influencer position. And then in your roles on the CAMT Equity Advisory Council and the AAMT, Atlantic Association. So many acronyms. You're also in an influencer position. It's such a great time in our history right now to be in those positions, because the spotlight has been placed on social justice in music therapy. Can you tell us a little bit about your work within the field of equity, accessibility, and inclusion within music therapy, and why this work is important to you?
Yeah, so I guess I'll just start off with saying it's such a marathon, this work. One of my best friends is Caribbean, and she said, like, one of my worst fears, Sarah, is, you know, when all of this Black Lives Matter just, like, goes away on social media. And, like, she's like, that's one of my biggest fears. And, yeah, that's a fear of mine, too. And just realizing, like, I'm in this for the long haul. Things will change, but will things be healed, you know, within 50, 100 years? I don't know, but like I'm in it for the long haul, so I'm excited with that. So I guess I'll start with, for my master's thesis, I looked at indigenous ways of like knowing, and it was a personal journey for me. My mother's side is Métis, which is one of like the three indigenous groups recognized by the Canadian government. So, we are like Cree and Scottish, so like Anglo-Métis, my mother's side. So I didn't grow up like knowing anything about my mother's like history or Métis people really. So in my master's, like I explored how I thought about that. And that really came into play because in Montreal, I did one of my stages at a Indigenous women's shelter and also at a homeless men's shelter where there's quite a high population of Inuit people there. So these experiences really like led me to understanding like, okay, I also share some Indigenous heritage. Like, how do I think about this myself? So at the Indigenous women's shelter, like every morning we were invited, and it's such an honor, to smudge. And so are either of you familiar with smudging?
Yeah.
Okay. So every Indigenous nation or people are different and might use it in a different way. But from my, what I've been told is that smudging is, you can do it with a few different things. Like often you'll have a shell, so like grounding you to earth. And then you can burn something like sweet grass. So, And when you burn it, you sort of bring the, I wish there was a visual, you bring the smoke like over your head and over your ears and your eyes. And the idea is it's sort of like purifying you or cleansing you and like really protecting you from like hearing things that are maybe not positive. Mm-hmm. And there's also like an aspect of like protecting you from yourself, you know, because I think we're all, I know I'm good at not being kind to myself.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think, yeah, just being in that culture and like them being so gracious and generous to invite us into that really like got the wheels turning of like, Sarah, you got to know who you are. You got to know where you came from. And to like honor like my family, my grandpa, my mother's dad, like he really struggled with his identity and like he was called an Indian, or as we now say, an Indigenous person. And there was so much shame around it. And I feel like, you know, I would love to, I think part of like the work I'm doing myself is like sort of trying to heal some like intergenerational trauma that's like been passed on.
Yeah, absolutely.
So much stigma. Yeah. So that's, I guess, part of my time in Montreal. And then now in St. John, I work with L'Arche, which is a community for people with intellectual disabilities, or different abilities, as I like to say. And so I think, yeah, knowing people, having relationships with people is what, like, sort of fostered wanting better lives for them and for myself. And just, like, a recognition of, like, we're all part of this world, you know? I really like Lord of the Rings, so I wrote down some quotes, and I think Samwise Gamgee says this, but it's like, there's some good in this world and it's worth fighting for. So like that part about social justice is like, this is so good that we can like stand together and be like, we are equals. No one is better than anyone. And so just like that. That
we
just,
are
like,
the fellowship.
Yes. Yes. There's also this quote by Rupi Kaur, she is a Canadian, I believe, like East Asian poet, and she said, we all move forward when we recognize how resilient and striking the women around us are. And I love that, just like, and I find, like, for myself, when I was working with Indigenous clients, like, the struggle that Indigenous people have been put through in Canada has been like horrific. The fact that they are still like here and fighting, and they will never stop fighting. And like I heard once from an Indigenous person, like, we are born like advocates and like fighting. So I just love that, and I find so much strength in that. And yeah, solidarity.
Yes. I love that so much. I don't know how we can truthfully talk about this topic and have empathy and want to be an active ally in social justice without getting emotional and without feeling connected to it in some way. And in June, my friend Priya Shah and I created a resource. We compiled a resource for anti-oppressive practices, and we included a list of TED Talks. And in one of the TED Talks, it was called something about looking at Canada as, or redefining Canada's nice identity to the world, like Canada and their nice identity reimagined. And I know looking at the situation in terms of how things are blowing up in the States, sometimes Canadians can look at our situation as not as awful or not as blatantly obvious, but that doesn't mean that we should ignore it and we should just think that we are nice. We are the nice country. We're not treating people as awfully, as unjust. But any injustice is equally, unjust.
Yeah, I think when we do that, or like, yeah, we're nice, like we have everything going for us up here. Like what's really happening is just like a denial, you know? And like, I don't know if you guys talk too much about like white fragility, but I feel like there's so much, well, it's not that bad, or like, you know, what about like white people, or like all lives matter, that sort of statement. And like, yeah, there's such, I think it's hard, like it's really hard work to acknowledge like we've been part of oppression.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, that's hard to acknowledge. college. But thank you so much, like Haley and Priya, for writing that resource. I feel like I've seen it shared so much, and even in the States on like the Music Therapists Unite Facebook page, and it's such a great place to like start.
Yeah, that's all it is. It's just a place to start and to get that conversation going that's so needed within our field, within our white cis female dominated field. Right? We need to have those conversations and move them forward. So I also want to publicly acknowledge, thank you for your work and pushing the bill for being one of the founders of the CAMT's Equity Advisory Council. Like, how needed.
Yeah. I mean, I think that this is such a huge topic and a heavy topic, and there's a lot that we still need to learn. And I think, Haley, as you just mentioned, even the representation of the music therapists in our community, there's not as much diversity there all the time as well, and being aware of that. And for many of us, these conversations are either new or just we don't know how to approach them in some capacities. And I think it's so, so important for us to have these discussions and to have these resources like the one that you and Priya created to be able to engage in these conversations and to be aware of what it is that's happening in the world and how it relates to us in a variety of capacities, and how we can be people of change in that capacity, how we can support, how we can be an ally, how we can positively impact the world as opposed to, denying, like had been mentioned, or evading it in some capacity. So I think that's really, really important. And I'm very grateful that we're able to have these discussions and that some resources are coming about so that we can better support one another and ourselves and our learning. And I'm grateful for the CAMT's Equity Advisory Council for us to have that those resources here. I'm wondering if there are any initiatives that we can maybe expect from the CAMT's Equity Advisory Council, or how MTAs can get involved in these discussions and initiatives.
Yeah, so in early August, the Equity Advisory Council is preparing for a forum on equity and inclusion led by the CAMT membership. So there will be some emails sent out about like what are some questions we have or that we want people to think about, and then you can send them in prior to the forum. So like we all have a bit of time to think about it. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're not experts like by any means. We are passionate about this field, but you know, we also have blind spots. I have blind spots. So so that's the beauty of the CAMT membership, that we can all work on this together. So there will be a forum coming out early August, but yeah, some emails will be sent out about that. We're also working with the board currently to sort of figure out what our structure is and what our relationship looks like with the board going forward, because this is a new initiative. So we're trying to figure out like, how do we work together? I'm not like, I haven't done a whole lot of board work, so I'm also like new to that field. Mm-hmm. For CAMT membership, I guess like just keep an eye out in your emails regarding the forum. And there will also be recruitment invitations for the Equity Advisory Council. So we have a whole like recruitment page and like have questions that people can answer if they're looking to get involved. And like, yeah, I think even if you're not ready right now, or maybe you have too much on your plate, I think there will be things coming up in the future to get involved with. And in terms of like future work, we have a lot of dreams. So yeah, keep posted.
That's so great. Thank you for sharing that. I'm definitely going to keep my eyes peeled for those opportunities.
Great.
Yeah.
I like that there were two things that you said. So you'd mentioned that you guys have some blind spots, and I think that's so important to acknowledge. And I think that it's really great that there's this setup that you're inviting other people to join the discussion. And like you said, that you can work with the MTA membership, because we all come from different lived experiences and things that we've learned from others in our lives, or things that we've personally experienced. And I think that it's so great to acknowledge that we are not experts necessarily on this topic, but that we're here to learn and to grow and to acknowledge these, as opposed to just deciding to ignore them. Sometimes when we're not fully versed in something, we just close off or don't do something about it. So I'm grateful to hear that we can acknowledge those blind spots and then lean on one another to kind of fill in the gaps like a puzzle.
There's a, I'm not sure if you're familiar, that's like a common phrase that I keep coming back to, but there's a professor whose name is Ibram Kendi, I believe, who wrote How to Be an Anti-Racist, and he talked about how, like, we all have prejudices, we all have racist thoughts and ideas, but that doesn't have to be the case tomorrow, you know? And I just love that there's so much grace in that, because, you know, we are a byproduct of our society. And when you're young, perhaps, like, you might not, you might not have those sort of, like, questions or concerns because maybe, you know, you have other things that, like, toys and all that. you have other things on the mind, but when you grow up, you're like, oh, okay, I'm part of this world. How can I give back? How can I share? So, yeah, sorry, lost my train of thought, but,
that's great.
You know, people have been doing this work for a long time. Like, I think of, like, Sue Baines. And I think it's Cheryl Suapegaham, who's an Indigenous music therapist. And, like, Sue Baines has been doing anti-oppressive work for so long. And, like, Guylaine Biancourt, Laurel Young, Sandy Curtis. And so we come from a long line of, like, amazing, strong social justice warriors.
Yes, I love that. The other piece that you mentioned a little while back was just the word relationship, and that has just really resonated with me. I wanted to delve there a little bit more, because for me, when I'm interacting with anyone, it comes down to that relationship, right? And I think that something that I've been very grateful for is to build those relationships and learn from those relationships, and hearing people's stories both inside and outside of therapy, that's really for me been the biggest informant of how I approach situations or how I interact with one another, is being able to hear their stories and being able to just listen in a lot of cases, instead of trying to put my my beliefs onto something else, to hear that story, to really, really listen. And that's been the biggest informer of how I approach the world. And I think that's really interesting that you mentioned the word relationships, because it is so focused on what we can gather from others around us and not things that we always inherently.
I think it's really great that we have these platforms in order to build those relationships and in order to share our truth and to learn and grow from one another. I really feel like this is a very pivotal time in our history, and I'm hopeful that it is, and that it will be the first point of change that is just ever growing and ever continuing, because I don't think there's ever an end point. There, like you said, we all have our implicit biases. We all have things that we can improve upon, and I don't think that's necessarily going to go away, but we can do the work to make things better for one another by acknowledging our responsibility and holding ourselves and those around us accountable for their actions.
Yes, totally.
And so I guess in this time of pivotal change and focus on social justice, what does it mean for you to be a music therapist in today's society?
This is a great question. I think like a lot of what we've talked about, to be aware of what's going on, to be try and be as self-aware as possible, like constantly checking in with yourself, looking at like, what are my assumptions about like working with this person. I found I've learned a lot working with people from different cultures than me. So if possible, like trying to work or maybe trying to be friends with people from other cultures. So having that inform your worldview. And I had this idea from with the EAC, we've been working with this equity consultant, Jessica Bloor, who is such an amazing person. And part of her work, she's a drama therapist, and she invites her clients into spaces to talk about what's going on in the world around them. So I think as music therapists, for us to provide like brave spaces to talk about what's going on in the world, asking like, how do you feel about Black Lives Matter? How do you feel about climate change? if, say, someone is Asian, asking about maybe their experience of COVID, because I think that COVID-19 has just blown up a lot of prejudices against Asian people in our society and Asian music therapists. So sometimes I think about, like, am I too direct, you know? But sometimes directness, like, really lends well for people to be like, oh, I was afraid to talk about this, but if this person's willing to be brave as a therapist, like, going from there. And I think part of our work is to also acknowledge to our clients, like, you know, I'm learning too. I don't know what your experience is like, but if you want to share, I'm willing to, like, listen, like you were talking about, Kim, like, deeply listen and accept what you have to say as truth. I think that's so powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That's really special to be able to provide those spaces, right? I love that term, brave spaces.
Me
that's
too. I literally just wrote it down, and we may name the episode that.
Yeah, that's so powerful, right? And I think a lot of people don't necessarily have that space in their everyday lives where it's okay to talk about these things, and it should be. We should be normalizing having these discussions in those brave spaces so that we can unpack some of the things we're experiencing. So for us to be able to provide that space for us to open those conversations is something so, so special.
And the term brave space, like I've been like questioning a lot what I think about safe space. Because sometimes, like, in order for healing to begin, we need to like feel scared or like unsafe. And us as therapists, like, willing to be like, I know this is hard, I know this is scary, but I feel like this will be helpful for you, and do it in a really like gentle way. So safe spaces, I don't know if like we can always say that we're providing a safe space, but the brave space, the idea of like, you can be brave here, you can have courage here, you're brave by just like showing up and being like, I want to work on myself, you know, there's so much strength in that.
Yeah. I've been really debating that in my mind as well, because the idea of safe spaces, the idea of safety, looks so different depending on what your life experiences have been and your lens in the world. And so I think that almost sometimes as music therapists, that can perpetuate kind of that power dynamic if you're imposing safety from your lens within a music therapy setting. And so I love this idea of brave spaces instead, or in tandem, or as a gateway to get to an agreed upon safe space, or a concept of safety. I love that idea of brave spaces, because you have to step into what that word means for you.
It's very empowering to be able to say, like, because that also gives that ownership of what's brave to you, right? You only share, or you only go as deep as you feel brave enough to do in this moment, and we can kind of build on that. And yeah, I've been unpacking this idea of safe space as well, because there's so many different elements to it, and something that feels safe one week or one day might not the next week. Maybe delving into a topic or maybe doing a specific intervention feel safe, but then something else has happened in your life that you were not aware of yet, and it no longer feels safe. And yeah, like you said, Haley, we're kind of imposing what safety feels like for us onto them when it might not necessarily be a safe space yet, but it can be that brave space to delve into it, and us working as closely as we can with providing that safety and, yeah, working towards that. I think it's really beautiful and important.
I also wanted to share quickly, like, sometimes, like, you know, as music therapists, we never stop advocating. And I've had, like, some experiences where I get sort of, like, upset or annoyed. And I think, I don't know if this is the case for other music therapists, but I find when I am getting upset by what other people are thinking about music therapy, it really has to do with me. And like, am I respecting myself? Am I like, do I know the power of music therapy? Because if I did, then I think those comments would have less impact on me. And at the end of the day, like, our clients don't care. I don't think they care at all about if we're a certified music therapist or what our credentials are. So I just wanted to like put that sort of little piece in there that sometimes I think the advocacy part, like, what are we really advocating for? Are we acting out of defense? Mm-hmm. And like, does that change our relationship with our clients then? Like, are we leading or providing guidance like out of love or like fear, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a very common experience of music therapists to have that feeling of needing to advocate 24/7 and where that's coming from. And yeah, I think oftentimes it is coming out of that place of defensiveness because we often have those comments that maybe don't line up with what we know music therapy to be and what we know in the power of music. But you're absolutely right. We need to take a look at why. Why are we impacted so heavily by this? And when do we advocate and when do we focus on what it is we're doing and feel okay in that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there is a lot happening in the world around us, a lot in our field to tackle. So this is a bit of a hefty question, but what do you hope for the future of music therapy?
Again, like such a great question. You guys have amazing questions. So I think like indigenization of music just music therapy be indigenized. And what I mean by that is just like listening and believing indigenous stories and people, being aware of that when like working with indigenous people, delving into what is the history of indigenous people in Canada. And I think like globally, there are a lot of similarities. So just, starting with that, I think I also have a hope of like, you mentioned earlier, Haley, like changing the climate or changing the landscape of music therapy from white cisgendered women to like just a like BIPOC, so Black, Indigenous, people of color, people of different abilities. Yeah, just like a more varied scope of our field, because I think that would reflect our clients as well. And I don't mean this to say like, I think we, like I identify as a white woman. So I think I do have things to offer and like I have a voice and also the women in our field do, but just being aware of like, you know, whose voices are being heard. Am I sacrificing anything? Am I giving my voice to other people?
Mm-hmm.
So just being aware of that. I think there's also parts around like actively talking about these topics, actively talking about equity and inclusion, like that I think that needs to really like ground us, checking in with white privilege and like, what are the power dynamics at play? Is there oppression in our profession? And like, how are we working to dismantle it or relearn new ways of like being, doing and knowing?
Mm-hmm.
And I think music historically has been such like a motivator of change, but it's also been like a tool of oppression.
Yeah.
I've been thinking about like, the song that I sing all the time in long-term care, I think it's, I've been working on the railroad and I've been looking at the history of that and it was used like for blackface sketches.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just like questioning like what music we're using with people, are we trying to vary it up? Mm-hmm. And maybe gently educating when necessary or when we feel like it would lend well to respecting ourselves and respecting the people maybe that it's about. I'll just give a like a quick example. Something that comes up a lot when I use drums with people is like the idea of the indigenous people are coming. They'll say the Indians are coming, but the indigenous people are coming. And I think there's such like a fear of indigenous people like in our culture, and that's been just like passed on. So sometimes, depending, I guess, like on how I'm feeling that day, I might be like, oh, like, yeah, indigenous people use this as like a tool for healing, or like this represents like Mother Earth, and like just like gently educating and trying not to shame anyone. I don't know if it's like part of my work to put my own views on my clients, even if I feel like what they believe is very problematic.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it's important to like respect ourselves, so trying to gently educate when possible.
Yeah, I completely resonate with that sentiment. Working mostly in long-term care, you know, there are lots of differing viewpoints and other factors that inhibit your ability to intervene in situations that perhaps you see as inequitable. And you just have to really gently be support for that person and kind of put your own feelings to the side in that moment, because what's most important sometimes, depending on the situation, is the safety of those people. And that's what it comes down to as our work of therapists. It's a very selfless job in that we're always putting our clients first, but there's also a need to focus and do the work on ourselves outside of our therapy hats in order to be the best therapist that we can be.
Yes. And it's hard. It's very hard.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I just wanted to end on like a really hopeful note. There's a Indigenous artist, Indigenous two-spirited artist, from New Brunswick, from Tobique First Nation. And he won the Polaris Prize in 2018. His name's Jeremy Dutcher. And in part of his speech, he said, like, music is changing this land. And I'm just like, yes, music is changing this land. Let's be part of that. We are part of that. And how can we lead to a better future, you know, for our clients, for ourselves, for our world? And music therapy is so, like, yeah, we're working with, like, magic, you know, and, like, beauty. And, like, I think beauty is what, like, transforms us at the end of the day, you know? So we have so much to work with. So, like, let's do it.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Able Voice Podcast.
If you want to find more content like this, please subscribe to the podcast and follow us on social media at MTA Haley
and at MTA.Kimberly to get notified when new episodes become available.